previous year about?
What?
Yeah.
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 If it says
what time did it start?
Gave
an hour here.
Yeah, it could be longer.
Could have been longer?
Yeah.
It would have been longer if I wouldn't have stopped. Everybody, please find your seats.
Our name's already on it?
Yes. Your name's Dad.
Well,
I don't know who I am.
You think you're inviting me, I don't think.
Jay said you didn't
know his
name.
Go with him.
I think I'm just not right writing my name, see if you notice.
He did.
Okay, I'm passing out a seating chart that I need. All right, so please fill it in, and if you make a mistake, you're going to be penalized.
What's up, okay?
I should
write your name.
All right. A reintroduction to my chug. Why do you want to come to my chug? Number one, because it's mandatory. Number two, because it's entertaining. Number three, because I focus on purely practical halacha, trying to explain to you the whys as well, but very practical halacha. Right? The people that are not going to be in this chug or miss a chug inevitably come to ask me, you know, something on that day that they missed, for sure. In other words, I'm going to give a chug on how to buy an esrog, where to buy an esrog, where the best buys are. That's pretty practical, right? On the Jewish level, that's extremely, extremely practical stuff. Most of you, you know, your entire lives, when you just were given an esrog, your father gave you an esrog, the school gave you an esrog. This year, you're going to go out and buy one on your own. You want to know your way around an esrog, right? That type of thing. It's kind of like Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but all the not relevant things cut out with some humor thrown in. I welcome questions. I welcome personal anecdotes. Okay. What did I say? Okay. Anything that comes up is good. I promise you it'll be much shorter than the previous chug. Much, much, significantly shorter than the previous chug. And if it goes over 45 minutes, you can gong me. Just go gong. And we'll just stop right there.
When do we start?
Huh?
How long do we start?
Starting right now. What time is supper?
7:15.
No, so for sure, tell me when it's 7:11, because I want you guys to be able to get down there to the lunchroom before the Israelis. All right? Tell me when it's 7:11. I'll stop at 7:11. Doesn't have to go to 7:15.
I don't want to eat supper at 7:11.
Okay? Anyways, here, give out these freebies. Some free sheets here. Now, the topics I like, as I said, the topics I want to focus on are very halacha lemaisa. It's short. And lastly, I said that people have come to my shurim. My wife has a reputation of being among the better cooks, maybe the best cook of a long short.
That's enough.
And the better I get to know you, the better your chances are of getting invited and re-invited to meals. Now, I'd like to start with halachot that are specific to Eretz Yisrael, if possible, but the truth is, it's before Sukkot, so I'm going to have to give a shir on Etrog Lulav. I'm going to have to give a little bit about Sukkot. When people think about halachot that are specific to Eretz Yisrael, they think mitzvot tluyot ba'aretz, they think about Truma de Masrot, etc., etc. On the level of practicality, Truma de Masrot are not very, very high. In other words, there will be a time in the year I'll give a chug in what's it all about and how to be mafrish, etc. But most of you won't find a situation that you're necessarily going to have to be mafrish. So even though I used to give the shir in the beginning of the year, now it's just very much pushed more towards the end of the year about hafrashat truma ma'aser. But if any of you have any of these questions on mitzvot tluyot ba'aretz questions, I'm more than happy to answer. You know, come up to me in the base midrash and I'll explain it to you. I will have to give you a shir on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golios. Now, should I keep 2 days of Yom Tov? Should I keep 1 day? Should I keep 1.5 days? Etc., etc. And the why. what's it all about. I have to do all those things before Sukkot, so it will be a little bit packed. But today, I'd really rather speak about a topic that's closest to my heart, and that is food. I want to talk about food. I want to talk about, as you might see, you got these little sheets. I want to talk about kashrut in Israel. And it's very, very important to know. It's not nitty-gritty of Shulchan Aruch, it's more on a very, very practical level what's going on. Now, you might ask yourselves, why would kashrut in Israel be any different than kashrut in Chutzlars or wherever I come from? And the answer is like this. In various communities in Galut, and it has not yet been decided which community in Galut rules, and which is the best. It hasn't been decided yet. But in the various communities in Galut, when you have a kashrut agency, or you have somebody overseeing, I think most of you want to know, you know, let's say restaurants, what's the deal, or food products, what's the deal. Generally speaking, you're talking about agencies that will cater to a Shomer Shabbos crowd, because generally speaking, people who are Shomer Shabbat are those that also keep kosher, okay, and are interested in knowing the kosher products and kosher restaurants, etc. There's no need for any type of double standard. And as things turned out, and it's not only in America or in England, in Australia and South Africa, in many, many places when you have kosher agencies, the standard is basically the same. Even from agency to agency, there's slight differences, but it's basically the same. In Israel, it's completely different. In Israel, you have a double standard. Not a double standard in the negative way, double standard, but in the practical, real way, double standard. I remember many, many years ago when I took a smicha b'china from the Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim, and, you know, we sat with him like for 8 hours or something like that, but at the end we schmoozed a little bit, and one of the guys asked him a question, what's this deal with this new Tu'udat Kashrut that's Mahadran? It was just like invented then, that the Rabbanut of Yerushalayim came out with a Tu'udat that was Mahadran. Okay, we're really talking about many years ago. And so the Rav Rashi said, look, the reality is that there are many, many Jews in Israel that want to keep kosher. The people who keep kosher in Israel are not limited to the people that are Shomer Shabbat. I would probably say, that's fair to say, that there are more non-Shomer Shabbos people keeping kosher than Shomer Shabbos people keeping kosher in Israel. Okay? Interesting statistic. I would say that maybe 25-30% of the population, maybe 25-30% of the population of the Jews in Israel might be Shomer Shabbos on some level. Okay? What percentage do you think fast on Yom Kippur of the Jewish population in Israel? 85%. Something like 87% fast on Yom Kippur. So that although the media and the people who rule Israel are very chiloni, they don't really reflect the actual population. No, the actual population is much more traditional than perhaps the media would let on, or the politicians would let on. They're much, much more traditional. And in keeping kashrut, if they could, very close to that 87%, if they could, would prefer to keep kashrut, if it would be easy enough, so to speak. So the rabbiniot, the rabbinate of Israel, and when we talk about rabbinate Israel, we could talk about two different sections. One, the rabbinate of, chief rabbinate of all of Israel, that, let's say, is one agency that takes care of many, many different things, like many, many things, let's say, marriage, divorce, and burial, and all kinds of other issues, milah, etc. One of the things they're in charge of is importing of food. If an importer wants to put the word kosher on the food, they have to basically go through the chief rabbinate of all of Israel. Okay? Secondly, you have the rabbinate of each one of the different areas or cities in Israel. Like you have a chief rabbinate of Gush Etzion, you have a chief rabbinate of Efrat, Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, Haifa, etc., etc. As you go down the list all over the place, you have different chief rabbinates, and they work independently, but one common denominator is that they realize that they are dealing with a population that you know, half or more than half are not Shomer Shabbos, but one kosher, and the other half is Shomer Shabbos, etc. In order to make it possible that they can make it achievable, they have to lower their standards, at least when it comes to restaurants. They have to lower their standards in order that they should be able to make it affordable for restaurants to have a hashgacha. What I mean to say is, in 95% of your communities in Chutz La'aretz, if a restaurant would get a hashgacha, they would have to have, the agency would have to have some man in there, not necessarily a rabbi, but somebody that's in the restaurant all the hours that the restaurant's open. Or sometimes you have a situation where they develop a relationship with a restaurant owner who is a Shomer Shabbos, that they feel that they could trust him on some level, etc. But more or less, the supervision is full-time. Full-time. In most situations, when the Mashgiach leaves, the Mashgiach himself has a key to the storage room and the freezer, etc., etc., that he locks, so that the restaurant can't get an order in the middle of the night of horse meat or things like that, things that have happened throughout the world many, many, many times. Okay, that's how it is in Chutz La'aretz. In Israel, basically you would have to pay the salary of a person, which would cost a lot of money for a restaurant, and therefore there would be many restaurants that simply would not opt for having a hashgacha. And the rabbinate feels that they want to have as many restaurants under hashgacha as possible. So to make that possible, what they do is, instead of having someone there full time, they do spot checks. Okay, now there's some cities, there's no even standard among the cities. In some cities of Israel, a spot check would be to come in once a month. Rabbi pops in, surprise, surprise, once a month. Doesn't do very much at all. Doesn't make the person scared, oh, the rabbi's going to catch me. Because he only pops in once a month. In some places, it's once a week. Okay? Yerushalayim, over the past decade, has become much, much, much better. Now in Yerushalayim, the rabbi pops in once a day. Once a day. And that's a regular hashgacha. And this way, you have one rabbi can get a salary for a month, and he'll cover maybe 30, 40, or 50 restaurants, or whatever, how many restaurants he could visit in a day, and that makes it affordable for the restaurant to have a hashgacha. Now, that's a lower standard, so to speak. That's a standard that, A, the mashgichim themselves would not eat in the restaurant. They don't feel comfortable eating in that restaurant, because the mashgichim themselves know the deal and know that it's far from foolproof. Popping in even Yerushalayim, which is among the better situations, once a day, doesn't quite do it. The Rabbanut of Yerushalayim has many times published in their glossy publications, telling people, writing in the publications, that you should not be somich on the regular Tu'udat Kashrut of Yerushalayim, but rather you should look for Mahadran Hashkacha. In other words, they're unabashedly, with no embarrassment, they basically print that they say it's better, you should really prefer to only look towards Mahadran things. Okay? And this is what more or less the Rav Harashi explained to us, that to make it affordable or reachable for the general population, that's what they had to do. But of course, you know, someone who's regularly Shomer Shabbat and Makfir, etc., he should surely only look towards Mahajan Hashkacha. Mahajan Hashkacha is the equivalent of a full-time Hashkacha, even if sometimes it's not literal. In other words, at times you can go into a Mahajan restaurant and you won't find a Mashkiach, let's say in Yerushalayim, but it's definitely of a proper standard. Okay? That's very much the deal. And this double standard, and the reason why I'm explaining to you is, number one, that you should believe me, and number two, that you should realize you're not talking about evil people. You're not talking about some dastardly rabbi that will sign his name on a Tu'udah, and then he himself won't eat there, and he's basically lying to you when he's telling you that it's kosher. He's just dealing with that. That's the reality they deal with. In sharp contrast to the Rabbanut throughout the country are the private agencies, okay, mostly of the Haredim, that they keep their standard high, and they don't really care to drop their standard to make more kosher restaurants available for everybody. They don't have to care, because the Rabbanut does it anyway. And therefore, these agencies have a regular high standard, and they cater to their own people, so to speak, and the standard that they would like to see for their people. And that's why I printed out these symbols. This is not an all-inclusive list. There might be others that are not on this list. I could tell you, when I first came, there wasn't a person like me giving this chug, so I just walked up to Rav Lichtenstein, and I asked him, what's the deal with kashrut and to udot hechsher on restaurants, etc.? And he answered me the following. He said, look, I could tell you for a fact that not all the rabbanut of each city could you rely on. They're not all reliable. He said, and I'm not going to start giving you a list of the places that are not reliable, but I will give you a list of places that I happen to know are more reliable. And then he went ahead and gave me his list. I think it was like four names long. Okay. So I'm giving you a list that's much, much longer. But even, again, the Jerusalem Rabbinate Mahadran, it's the Mahadran. You should be really looking towards restaurants that are Mahadran. Now, I think I made it clear. I don't think anybody should walk out of this room saying that I said that a regular Teudah of Yerushalayim Rabbinate is not kosher. Chas v'shalom. That's not what I meant. That's not what I said. All I'm saying is that their standard of supervision is where the rabbi pops in for whatever it is, 10 minutes a day. And that is not the standard that anybody in this room, whatever country you're from, is not the standard that you're used to. Okay? That's number one. Number two, it's not the standard that the rabbis themselves of the rabbin of Yerushalayim feel a person should really do lechatchila. They really see it as, you know, in order to make it, again, I have to keep on repeating. That's the deal. Now, what if your Aunt Tilly comes in and she's making a bris for her grandson, okay? And is going to be the eating part of the bris is going to be in a restaurant in Yerushalayim that doesn't have a mahadran teudah. And you have to go, because if you don't go, it's going to create a whole family upheaval, okay? But on the other hand, you know, look, it's not exactly mahadran. Okay? That's happened to me. What would I advise you to do? This is what I would advise you to do in a didyeved shasat chak situation. I would call up the restaurant, ask to speak to a mashkiach. 9 out of 10, he won't be there, but you ask for his cell number. You get his cell number, you call him on the phone, and you identify yourself. Listen, you might even speak to him in English if you want, but usually it won't work. You probably have to do it in Hebrew. At this point, someone asked me, well, what if I don't speak Hebrew? So I'm offering you my services. If you want, you can call me, give me the mashkiach's number, and I'll make the call for you and report back to you. But this is the way the conversation goes. Hello, I learn in the yeshiva. I'm a ben Torah. I learn in yeshiva, and I got invited to this in this restaurant. I wanted to know, hear a little bit about the teudah or the kashrut. And then he'll start to tell you, well, the vegetables are from here, and the rice is checked by this person, and challah is mufrash by that person, and the meat, the chicken comes, is under this hashkacha, and the meat it comes, you know, from the, let's say, the rabbanut, you know, Argentina, not glatt meat, etc., etc. I'll give you a long list, and you just listen, you don't say anything. Then when he finishes his long speech, you say to him, excuse me for the chutzpah, but would you yourself eat in that restaurant? Okay, and then you wait and listen how he replies. If he starts to hem and to haw and this and that, well, I only eat outside my house, or I only eat this shchita, whatever, then you say, well, for besides the meat, let's say I don't touch the meat, would you eat the mashed potatoes? Would you eat the rice? Would you eat, you know, whatever? And you listen to what he has to say. If he says, you know, unhesitantly, yes, I would eat there, I do eat there, or whatever, other than the meat I eat there, then you could be sum up on that. You hear? Pardon me? No, what he says. We'll speak about meat separately. What he says. You know, if he tells you confidently, yes, I eat there, then fine. You know, but if it's clear from what he says, or that he doesn't want to give you an answer, etc., he doesn't eat there, then I would tell you, you know, maybe just stick to the bread, and that's basically it. You know, it's just not a good situation. Yeah. So, here, does anybody have any questions on the little pictures I gave you?
Yeah.
You'll know, most of them are Haredi. The OU has become big over the past 2-3 years here. The Haredi Ashkachot, as I said, are better because they keep their standards up and they're only interested in their own anyway. And if they catch a person cheating, they just burn down his restaurant. So really, these restaurants know that they don't. You're not going to fool around with the Eidah Freitas. Yeah.
Is there a place to find this online? Because personally, I usually lose papers, but I don't want to. Okay. Do you have this on file?
I got this from a site called. Is it on the bottom of the thing?
Should be. No. Bottom of yours.
It's one word. It's JerusalemKosherNews.com. Interesting site. It's written by this guy. He's clearly retired, an Oleh, that has nothing to do with his time. Because he does all kinds of investigations. He does these surprise investigations of this covert, and he's talking to this restaurant and that restaurant, and he writes a whole write-up. A year ago he attacked the OU, and the OU came back with a good rebuttal, and he was mowed there, on an M. It was exciting stuff for kashrut nerds. Yes. Yes, Jim.
Does this Mahadrin standard, let's say we went to Cafe Neman or something like that.
Cafe Neman is Mahadrin.
It is Mahadrin?
Yes.
So, not saying there's anything wrong with the Ravana Mishkama or the Mahadrin Mishkama, but I found that there was the hashkafas on almost all the candy balls and almost all the restaurants. So they go through the effort to get that really high standard.
When I first came,
the restaurants that were making so the chilonim can have a lot of kosher restaurants, they were even willing to pay instead of the kosher restaurants.
And therefore?
What do you mean? Therefore, what's the whole union here? There's the most kosher places. You try to go to the most kosher places you can. If with the other, you can't go.
But what if you want? What if you want yummy food? Anyway, I remember when I first came to Israel. I saw all the candy bars have Hebrew writing on them. They all must be kosher. Right? That's not necessarily the case, but candy bars you have to be careful about as well. And with that, yes, I'm sorry.
I know that sometimes in America, if you're on a sports game, you say oh yeah, it's kosher, but like everybody tells you can't buy it because of the equipment they use. It's a hot pretzel on the machine that was used in the pretzel area. Do you worry about the equipment that possibly can be used at all?
I'm not asking. What context are you asking about equipment?
I'm saying in general, with restaurants.
I'm still not with you. Give me an example. Give me a clear example.
She's touching machine.
Maybe it doesn't apply here.
In other words, you're saying you go to a restaurant that doesn't have hashkacha, or it has a regular hashkacha, not mahajan hashkacha,
yeah.
And you want what?
Something I don't know.
Cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You could have a cup of coffee.
Taste.
Huh? Okay.
Taste.
Not necessarily. You're gonna have. Let me get. I know there are a lot of questions. Let me get into another issue, another difference between chutz laaretz and here. In chutz laaretz, if you were to meet a vegetable. It's an innocent vegetable. How unkosher could a vegetable possibly be? Right? But in Israel, if you meet a carrot, okay, that carrot is basically guilty until proven innocent. What I mean to say is, that carrot is tevel, it's also to eat unless you have hafashot of tumur masro. So things are exactly opposite. You have to know that a fruit or vegetable was mufrash in order to be able to eat it. And all that is taken care of by the hashgacha. So if you start asking a question about equipment, that type of thing, or how unkosher could a baked potato be if it's already wrapped in tinfoil and doesn't touch any equipment, etc. Wrong. Now, it's a baked potato. It has to be mufrash. If it's not mufrash, it's mamish isser. It's Isser that is also Bolea Bekalim, and the Kalim become Usser. It's like Chazer almost. Okay, so that's another very, very big difference. The Rabbanut, when it comes to Kashrut, we could split it into three different areas. We could talk about fresh fruits and vegetables. Rabbanut gives a Hashkacha on those things, because as I just explained, you have to know that it's kosher. Okay, you could talk about restaurants. And you could talk about processed food that comes, in packages, made in big factories and in packages. The easiest area for them to give a hashkacha is processed food. because a company will get a regular supply. They'll have a regular person being mafresh from the maaser, and it's just all set up, and it shouldn't change. You don't have to be on your toes on the same level. And therefore, myself personally, and again, with these areas, I can't tell you absolute truth. And with these areas, by the way, you're going to go, let's say, to the base medrash and talk to Israeli chavrusas or something like that. The Israeli chavrusas, they'll eat anything that says, you know, tu'uda, most of them. Honestly, I think it's because they don't know, or they're just used to it, or that, et cetera, et cetera. There's a certain issue of standard. So when it comes to processed food, packaged food, I personally, if I have a choice, I would prefer looking for a better hashgacha. But let's say there's, you know, there's pickles or something, canned pickles, and I don't find necessarily what I consider a better hashgacha. I would buy a regular can of pickles. Okay? Candy and snacks and ice cream, etc., etc. I don't think you have to start checking who the hashgacha is. It has to have hashgacha, some hashgacha, but you don't have to start investigating the yichus of the hashgacha, etc., etc. You know, even the rabbanut of way, we're out, whatever, I think you could be somechan, but that's my opinion. You know, that's my personal opinion. I'm not a Navi, I don't know necessarily, but from my experience in Israel, you could be somechan on those type of things. The next area, however, which is restaurants, is extremely difficult to cover. Things are constantly happening. They run out of onions, and they, you know, don't use a regular supply. They send one of the workers down the street to the shuk or whatever to pick up a sack of onions, and then they're not necessarily kosher onions. And the rabbi, where's the rabbi? The rabbi only pops in, you know, at 9 o'clock in the morning for 5-10 minutes. In other words, things like that could happen very easily. It doesn't have to be treif meat being brought in. Okay? It could be things like that. It could be things like bishul akum. Bishul akum, okay, it's not like one of these chumris that people with payas keep. Bishul Akum is a Shulchan Aruch. Every Jew follows the halachos of Bishul Akum. There might be some differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, but the basic halacha of Bishul Akum is the same. Okay, 4 years ago, somebody called me up on a Matzah Shabbos, could I speak to the Mashkiach? So I called up the Mashkiach, I went through what I just explained to you, and then he says to me, wait a second, are you talking about now on Matzah Shabbos? I said, yes. He said, no, in Matzah Shabbos you can't eat there. I said, why? He says, because the entire kitchen staff are all Arabs, and they turn on the fire on Matzah Shabbos. I'm not there to turn on the fire on Matzah Shabbos, because they don't pay me to come down on Matzah Shabbos. And it's a problem with Bishul Akum. I said, wait a second. You're telling me that on Matzah Shabbos, all the food that's served there is Bishul Akum. You mean maybe according to Sfaradim, it's Bishul Akum, but for Ashkenazim, it's okay? He says, no, even for Ashkenazim, it's not okay. I said, then how in the world could you sign your name on a Te'udah that you're saying that it's kosher if you're giving me Eidut right now that all the food is not kosher? So then he starts crying to me that I reported it, but they didn't do anything, blah, 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 blah. But the guy, Mamish, told me Eidut that everything in that restaurant, I don't mind speaking Lashon Hara, maybe they fixed it. It was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Little Italy, okay? I said to him, you know, if it's not kosher, then all the pots and pans are not kosher, and I just don't understand what you're talking about. That's it. He had nothing to answer me. Restaurants are difficult. And therefore, I'm just trying to stress, there is a real need for a Mahajan Hashkacha. It's not just, is the meat glad, is the meat not glad, and things like that. The last area, which is probably the most difficult for them, is fruits and vegetables. Because, again, there's just constant shipments from the fields to the suppliers or to the shuk, etc. If you have a fruit and vegetable store, they're constantly getting shipments in, and the guy has to be there to be mafresh, to separate tumut and masro. And they have to, like, usually wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, at the time the trucks go out, etc., etc. It's very, very, very challenging. That said, as I said, I think that you could be somewhat, generally speaking, on processed foods, packaged foods, etc. Among the packaged foods that you will buy, you might sometimes buy products that were actually made in Chutzlar. It's not made in Israel. And that makes things much a little bit more complicated. the Rabbanut is given the power, or they're the authority, to allow an importer to write kosher or not kosher on the product. But let's say an importer wants to import Wrigley's chewing gum from France, for argument's sake, or, I don't know, Mars bars from Switzerland, for argument's sake. And the importer wants to say that it's kosher, so he goes to the rabbinate. The rabbinate investigates on some level and then gives him a ishur to call it kosher. Now, what do they do? What's their investigation? They more or less pick up a phone and speak to the mashgiach that oversees that factory. They ask him a couple of questions to get a basic picture. Are we talking about an Orthodox rabbi? What level of competency he is? But more than that, they don't do. In other words, they're not there, and they don't fly to Switzerland. The Rabbanut of Israel doesn't fly to Switzerland or to France to check these things out. All they know is that the guy is Orthodox, and he says, yes, I'm the mashgiach of this in this place. That's all they do. And that word is called an Ishur with an Aleph, Yud, Shin, Vav, Resh. The Ishur HaRabbanut, HaRashit. You find it on chocolate bars from Germany, from all over the place. The Ishur HaRabbanut, HaRashit. Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? You have no idea. I mean, again, it has to do with standards. If you're careful, you're not careful. Some people in America wouldn't eat certain hashgachot, others yes, etc. What I personally do is, there's always some guy from yeshiva from some place in the world, and I ask him, let's say a guy from Switzerland, I ask him, such and such rabbi, do the Orthodox Jews rely on him or not? If he says yes, they rely on him, so then I know that I could have that chocolate bar or whatever. But realize that there's a big difference. When you see the word be'ishur, all it's saying is that they're recognizing it. Sometimes you can go into, let's say, like a sandwich store in Yerushalayim, and instead of a tu'udah, does everybody know what a tu'udah is? Yeah. Tu'udah is a certificate of kashrut. Instead of a normal tu'udah that's signed by the rabbinate of the city that it's in, you'll find an ishur. Again, just declaring, okaying, so to speak. Because what basically they're saying is that all the sandwiches or all the baked goods in this shop are actually baked in Tel Aviv, and it's under the hashkacha of the Rabbanut of Tel Aviv. Okay? In other words, the Rabbanut of Yerushalayim, for a store to sell unpackaged food, needs at least an Ishur or a Tu'udah by law, and that's how they get the Ishur. So the Rabbanut of Yerushalayim is saying, we don't take any responsibility for the kashrut of this. We're just telling you that indeed there is some other organization, that oversees that. Don't be fooled by that. No, it's got nothing to do with the standard of Yerushalayim. And here I want to talk about why the standards of one city varies from one city to the next. It doesn't have to do with what tzaddikim there are or how evil they are. It has to do with the percentage of population that is religious or interested in kosher. In Yerushalayim, you have a very, very high percentage of religious people, and therefore the city council and the religious council their funding, etc., is determined by the general city council, and therefore they have more resources to have, let's say, more mashgichim per restaurant, or let's say less restaurants per mashgiach. In a city like Haifa or Tel Aviv, where the percentage of religious people is much, much lower, normally speaking, their resources allocation is lower. And therefore, generally speaking, they have less amount of manpower to oversee many more restaurants, and therefore it's simply much, much more difficult. Okay? Questions so far? Yes, Michael.
If you're in a restaurant and they're serving, they don't have a lot very much coffee, and they're serving.
What are you doing in the restaurant?
Fully came to you.
Okay.
So you're in the restaurant, right? And they have a salad bar or whatever. Can you be mockrish by yourself?
If you know how.
Well, that was my assumption of the question. But
you know how to be mockrish?
No. Well, that's going to be later this year.
Yeah, but that's going to be much later. Yes. So the answer to your question is, if you know how to be mouthish, yes, you can. It could be quite messy, like if you're eating a falafel or something like that, it could be quite messy. But, yes.
And then also, generally, you rely on mashgachah for the bread. Isn't there just as much of a problem with bread as
in Yerushalayim? In Yerushalayim, unless it's bread baked by the restaurant. Usually, if you have a little bit of experience, you could tell. the bread's not a problem. The larger bakeries all have good hashkafot in Yerushalayim. Generally speaking, larger bakeries do, but there are a lot of restaurants that bake the bread on the premises, and then that is an issue. It's an issue to know to be mafresh challah properly. It's really not a simple thing. Sure. No, the makolet here is fine. Makolet here is covered.
Everything in it.
Well, look, I that's a different topic that I hope to get to. The meat that's sold in the makolet, some of it is glatt and some of it is not glatt. Okay. Other than that, you know, and when I'm talking about meat, you know, saying salami and cow meat and things like that, some of it is glatt and some of it is not glatt. Okay. I'll explain the issue of glatt. If I have time now, I'll tell you since we brought it up. If you come from a community, this is according to Rav Lichtenstein. This is a question I asked him years ago. If you come from a community where there is no Shomer Shabbos butcher that will sell you non-glatt meat, then de facto and halachically your minhag of your community is to be makbid on glatt. Even if your parents might, you know, come to Israel on vacation, it doesn't make a difference. Your community is to be makbid on glatt, and therefore you should be makbid on glatt. There are not that many Jewish communities throughout the world now. There are not that many that, you know, are not makbid on glatt. There are some. There are some smaller places in America, maybe London, right? Yeah. London, there are Shomer Shabbos Jews that eat glatt and not glatt. Shomer Shabbos, right? But generally speaking, so that's there's the issue of glatt. Okay, but other than that, makolet is fine. The Rabbanut of Gush Etzion and Efrat is fine. As far as I know, you know, any place that has a hashkacha, even if it doesn't say Mahadran on it, I think it could be summer. Yes?
A place where you can find a waste, let's say you're going to Haifa, where there aren't that many...
Oh, I'm sorry, just wait, before I forget something. I'm just thinking, all the eateries in Gush Etzion just flashed through my mind just now. Burgers Bar. The Burgers Bar here in Efrat is one of the few Burgers Bar that's truly glatt and mahadran. Okay? There are many, many Burgers Bar throughout Israel, and they don't have a mahadran ashkacha, but they'll tell you that the meat is glatt. And basically, they claim that the supply of their meat is glatt, but they don't really have a full-time mashkiach, so to speak. That is not in my eyes, that's not a Mahajan restaurant, even though the claim to serve, you know, glatt meat. A lot of times you'll see kosher b'hashkachat rabanut, you know, and then they say basar chalak beit Yosef, and it's a regular tuuda, but the meat that they use is glatt meat, or they claim that they're using glatt meat, but it's not, doesn't have a full time supervision. You have issues of tumor masrot and other possibilities, other things that could pop up. It's a bit more complicated. Yeah, I'm sorry, Daniel.
If you're going to like a random city without aren't too many Jews, they're going to Haifa, there aren't a lot of Jews.
It's a lot of Jews.
Religious.
Sorry.
Go on. Very, very difficult. You mentioned Haifa? Very, very difficult. If you ever go to Haifa and you want to come to me, I'll try to find something for you.
Okay? Yeah. There's no such thing as more or less kosher. There's kosher or trade. Is that correct? Something came up.
I think that the impression I'm trying to give everybody in this room is that there is such a thing. In other words, it's not necessarily kosher or trade. But, you know, the reason why I'm thinking I'm trying to explain it to you is that you'll fully understand it's not that place, I don't know, in Tel Aviv where they have a two-dot kashrut that it's trade. Nothing's straight, definitely not. I'm just saying that their standards of supervision is well, well below any community that anybody comes from here. In other words, they might pop in once a week, the rabbi will pop in once a week, and then you have a person who doesn't believe in God running the place, and Arabs doing all the cooking and the work, and he couldn't care less whether he eats kosher or not. He really doesn't care. He doesn't care, in the least.
you know, he'd be careful if he'd get caught, but he knows he won't get caught because the guy pops in once a month. Could someone say, oh, that's shreif? No, it's not shreif. It's just that you're dropping your standard. It's a high risk. You're dropping your standard. It's something that common jargon. Someone from New York would say that's trade, but it's not really trade. You're just taking a high risk. Yeah.
So are you saying that anything that's not revenued is reliable?
No.
So,
like, the reason why I gave up, I'll tell you, the reason I gave a list is because there are hashkafot. They're not, and let's say, only talk about Yerushalayim. There are hashkafot in Yerushalayim that are not Rabbanan Yerushalayim regular, and they're not Mahajan, and not any of the things that appear over there. There's something else. It's like Nezer HaKashrut, or all kinds of different names that pop up, and I have no comment. I could tell you that there, at any given time, there are like four or five agencies that are being sued for fraud, kosher agencies. You know, the people that are mamish evil.
So,
there are people that are evil, but I'm trying to tell you that you should stick to something that you know.
No.
So, is there like genius, a standard of regulation of
kind of douches thing?
2 weeks ago, I was walking the street with a client, and I saw a sign, shawarma for 15 shekel. And it said Mahadrin, and it said Bahashkachat Rebbe Mi blah 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 blah. That's what it said. I never heard of that. But my son said to me, listen, if it's Shuam 15 shekel, it can't be kosher. I never heard of it. I wouldn't go to eat this stuff. I'm telling you right now.
So the word Mahadrin, you have to do some Hakira?
If it's not on that list and not what I just told you, yeah, you can give me a call. I might be able to help you. I might say I never heard of it.
You can't just assume. You know it's not good.
Huh?
You know it's not good.
I'm not good. Yeah.
I don't know if this is possible to answer, being very nitpicky, but like, to what degree, like, if you spoke about the person who visits once a month, I mean, that seems extremely suspect. But to what degree is it legitimate that it you could call it kosher, but not, quote unquote, to our standard?
Again, in a,
like, in what way is it
because it's on, it's not a question of kosher or treif. That's why I'm giving you, trying to give you a picture of what the reality is. You understand? In other words, you're going to have a restaurant run by somebody who couldn't care less about cares about kashrus less than a goy in America would care, less than a goy. You know, because he himself is Jewish and doesn't keep kosher. Let's say doesn't care. He just wants more business. And the guy pops in once a month. You could have that.
So how could that even?
And his, again, I'm not only talking about his meat. I'm talking about his cucumbers and everything. Has to be mufrash. Has to come from a kosher source. Everything.
How's that even legitimate? Like on an extreme, but you have it. Like,
how does a rabbin allow themselves to do it? That's what I tried to explain to you. That if they would keep a standard, I would say 70% of the restaurants throughout Israel simply wouldn't have any hashkacha, and then people would be eating worse off. So they're doing the best they can.
That's not even a legitimate thing at all, though.
It's a situation, like, you know, in the middle of World War II. So you have like these field hospitals where doctors would start operating and et cetera, in situations that are shasat chak. You know, nowadays you'd say, well, how could you do a thing like that? What option do they have? They have no option.
Is that, like, if I understood what you're saying, is that it's sort of, it's mutter, just very bidyevet.
Yeah.
So how is that mutter
at
all if there's no reliability?
What?
Like, how's that mutter at all if there's no reliability?
I didn't say there's no reliability.
Like, this guy who maybe even hates
Rich.
I can't give you more than that. I can't give you more than I explained. Yeah.
Is there an essential difference between Sephardi and Ashkenazi Shechita? And what Hakshar and Mawich?
There is a difference between Sephardi and Ashkenazi Shechita, and there's some people that are very careful about the difference. It has to do with different Shita Rishonim and how to paskin. It's not necessarily that Sephardi is always more machmir than Ashkenazi, although in most things they are. Ashkenazi, some things are more machmir than Sephardi, some. That's something you have to ask your rabbi about.
Fine. Good.
I personally would not be machped to differentiate that much. In my own home, I would bring in Ashkenazi, but Yeah.
Can you get your Shlaim Hadron in like Tel Aviv or Haifa?
What?
Can you get your Shlaim Hadron in Tel Aviv or Haifa?
No. No, so there wouldn't be restaurants that would say your Shlaim Hadron. No.
Yeah. Fruits and vegetables in random supermarkets.
Fruits are very good question. Very important question. Very common. Fruits and vegetables in large supermarkets. We're talking about chains. If you have a supermarket chain, you basically go to the vegetable section, and there should be a Tuda glued to the wall. Okay? I'm not going to start telling you all the chains, but as far as I know, all the chains have some level of stuff for fruits and vegetables, and I believe you could be sum up on that. Not everybody would agree with me. You know, I'm sure you have friends in other yeshivot that the rabbi would say, no, it's not high enough. I think it's high enough. I think it's good enough. Okay? Yes?
Like fruit from the shuk.
From the shuk, you'd have to go to the shuk that has a tuda. You have to go to a store that has a tuda that gets stamped daily. Because he has to visit each day and he stamps it. Yeah.
What happens if you're in London, like Sainsbury's or something, like a massive food chain there, could it be with fruit?
It's an interesting question. If I was in London, the only thing I would be mock any fruit, only fruit and vegetable I'd be mock but not to buy something from Israel. I would stay far away from any fruits or vegetables from Israel.
Ironic.
But anything else, I don't know. I don't know what the Metzias is. I don't know what the Metzias is. You have to find out what the Metzias is.
Yeah.
Usually it's labeled because they hate the Israelis so much. They label it. This is from.
Yeah, Esau, yeah.
Yeah. If a restaurant is open on Shabbat, you should not eat there. Period. Period. Huh? You can't eat anything cooked that they cook, for sure not. But I wouldn't eat even a sandwich from there, you know. On during the weekday, because basically you have a premise running, we're in a situation where there's not going to be a mashkiach. Airport being an example, things, eateries in the airports generally can't have hashkacha. You should only buy packaged manufactured food from those stores. Yes, Mike. Yes, it affects the pots. You have to kasher a pot if a non-Jew does something that a Rav paskens that was bishul alkum, you have to kasher the pot. Any other questions? Yes.
You go to someone's house and you know they eat rabbi but they know that you eat hadrons, they can eat hadrons.
That would be a machloket. I personally don't think that you have to be makud on Caleb about that. You know, mahadrin, not mahadrin. As far as a Caleb, I don't think you have to be makud, but I would say most Haredim are Makbid even on Kalim. Yes?
We're probably talking about Kalim, meaning Kalim that's had something that was cooked by a non-Jew. But what about Kalim that was made by a non-Jew, like most of them, that wasn't a mikvah? Is that the same thing?
I know, I'll get into it some other day. Yeah. I'll just get into it some other day. It's more complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, let's say you said before that some of the Israelis aren't so mad on the different mashkahot. So how would that affect eating at an Israeli's house?
I don't think you have to worry about eating anybody's house from this yeshiva. If people are Shomer Shabbos, generally speaking, I tell you what I would do. Someone invites me and they're Shomer Shabbos Jews, I don't stick my nose into their kitchen, I don't check up. I'm so much that what they're doing is okay. Yeah.
Are there any other popular restaurants such as Burger Squire that have
there are
many.
Pizza.
You know
if you want to say some, I'll tell you. But there are many. You look at the Tuda. Yeah.
Does the person have to be like say you're at a restaurant and does the person who's doing a fresh challah have to be Shomer Shabbos? If they're doing it like with a broth and everything?
Very interesting question.
What did he say?
Very interesting question. Let's just say if the Rabbanut gave him the Tuda and said to them, You'll be mafish, then they investigated the person well enough to know that they could be mafish. And you'd be sum up on that Tuda.
It doesn't have anything to do with the Shomer
Shabbos,
what do you mean by
the
investigating?
No, so if a person's not Shomer Shabbos, but you know for a fact he was Mafish Chala, I think that is a good approach to Chala.
Yeah, but it's right. It wouldn't happen. I mean, in reality, it wouldn't happen. Okay. Yeah.
You said we shouldn't eat at a place that's open on Shabbos, which is like the whole future. Are there any commandments that will give us Shabbos to places open on Shabbos?
No. 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 They would. They wouldn't. They would. Okay. Yes. Last question. Then we leave.
For all the busy restaurants, after restaurants, would you say
louder?
They might have just the regular food out. So, you know, if you tell us now, it might be more helpful than like walking in.
I'm not such an expert. This I have to tell you. I understand that for most of you, this is a little bit of a shock or it's a surprise. I also understand that a lot of you that have come to Israel in previous visits, you weren't aware of all these differences, because you come from communities where if it was a kosher, it was a tuda, you didn't realize that there might be other standards of what the real deal is. And therefore, it's a little bit harder for you to accept what I'm telling you. So please weigh carefully what I'm saying. I'm telling you with all sincerity, I'm giving you general guidance. It's difficult. You will discover a lot of your friends over the next week from different yeshivot are also coming back with newly enlightened about the situation. And it's really because of people like yourselves that the amount of Mahadrin, Hashkachot, and Yushalayim has probably doubled each year for the past, I don't know, 5 years. In other words, the restaurants come to a realization that if they want, you know, the chutznik business, they have to get a Mahadrin Hashkacha. Okay.
Good
night.
Oh, right.
So what happened to Mudline? So I have family who I don't think they keep kosher, but when I come they always cook kosher, those that cook kosher food. Yeah. However, so I'm not sure if they keep kosher.
No, in Israel?
Yeah, in Israel. So I meant to like go
what,
stay with
what
them.
What city?
In outside Tel Aviv.
You don't know the name of the city?
Where they live? They live in
the Nud.
You know what? Ask me privately later, okay? Yes.
When it comes to Truman and Master, at least all the cases given the Gemara, you
have much.
Okay, fine. Look at the Gemara. You take a giant field. It's not like everyone grows the apples in the backyard. A giant field, you take 100 of them, go to Trumas and Master, and that's it. The ones that come up to your door are not Teva. Probably even Dubai if it was.
Okay. What did I think of that? What's your point?
Exactly. Why are you saying that every single vegetable there might be a problem? Vegetables come from big farms.
No. A vegetable in Israel has a cheskat isur. Until you know.
Of Master, anyway.
Yes, cheskat isur. In other words, until you know your mafresh, it's a cheskat isur. It's like a piece of meat. In other words, you can't eat the piece of meat unless you know it was shechted.
Yeah, but the same.
So the halacha is that a piece of meat has a cheskat isur until you have an erefa that tells you it was shechted. The same thing, you meet a vegetable in Israel that has a cheskat isur until you know it was mufra.
No, but you're also telling us things like, oh, it comes from this place, so it's meaning they're all made in this one factory and it has a hechsher, so it's probably fine. So these farms get hechsher, it's probably giant farms that all the apples in Israel might come from one farm. So it's easy for one. They don't. Do they come from 100 farms? Probably not.
I don't know.
I mean, for one, I'm just saying, like, the fact is that.
The fact is what? It should be easy. It's not easy. It's not.
It should be easier than meat that's not kosher. Meat that's not kosher, every slice of meat might come from an actually not kosher thing. But here, there's. You say, if it's pork meat,
every piece, every vegetable might not have been moved. It's a halakhic status. The amount of fruit,
say, in the form of a million things, like,
okay,
whatever percent of them were not.
If you go to someone's house and you shalim, that's what somebody asked me about. Yeah. What are you going to say? If you have someone shalim, even not religious, and you get an onion there, so you could follow a row.
Yeah.
That onion was already mufrash. Why? Because most of the onions in Yerushalayim are mufrash. But if you go into other cities, it's not necessarily so.
You can't say it's a fact of when you're doing the Trumas Masor, how much of it is taken off. That doesn't, meaning, say 90% of the food, say I did a whole, myself, I did a production, of 100 million, whatever, 100 apples, and so the only ones I had to remove was 10.
But you're talking completely theoretically.
Well, 10.
You're
meaning,
you're talking
so 90% of that
when
is
when you become
fine.
The king of Israel, the way you would like to run it,
I'm talking about what really happens in Israel. I'm talking about practical halacha. I'm not talking about theoretically it would be so easy if this, that, or the other. When you become king of Israel, you do that. Yeah.
You're saying that the Chazaka is not that 90% of every food that was Tovar is not the master pot section, but 90% of the food, this specific kind of food or vegetable in this specific city is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
is what you're saying.
What's your name?
Tommy.
Yes.
That the rabbi won't give some give a hashgacha unless they claim they have the standard of kosher, but whether they can believe that they keep up to the standard is what's relevant for us. I mean, like, there's one standard.
One standard of hashgacha. They go into a restaurant. They say, listen, you can only buy from this, and this suppliers. Okay. And they pop in. You know, you slam they'll pop in once a day. In Tel Aviv they'll pop in, I don't know when, once a month or whatever it is. And that's the best standard that they can reach.
So, but the standard is on...
It's kind of like Ford Motors. They make a million cars, and they know that one of those million cars are going to kill somebody. It's number crunching, right? You've heard of number crunching? No? They know. They know when they create the cars, yes, one of those cars definitely kills somebody. But that's, you know, to make them all perfect, would cost them whatever it is, $5 billion, so they just can't do it. It's the same number crunching. The Rabbanut, you know, they're just trying to reach within their resources some level of kosher that they could reach. It's not unkosher.
The level is in terms of the Rabbanut checking to make sure they're keeping up to the standard of kosher. That's what the level is, not what kosher is, right? Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
I would say that your house a couple years ago.
Shlomo.
Yes. I still remember the food was very good. So.
Something that wasn't exactly okay.
I approve.
Yeah, but as in, there was a case in London just now where they kept the meat also with the same. Like room as all the pigs and stuff, and then they just separated it off. It was like that was like caught on camera, whatever. Do you still are you still allowed to trust that hechsher or not? If they still,
that hechsher, you have to investigate what the story is and how they rectified it, and if it's been
being run all over the papers. It's all over the papers.
Exactly, so that it would raise a doubt in your mind, and then you would have to investigate what really happened and whether they rectified it and. People make mistakes. I don't think it makes them puzzle aided forever. You would have to recheck to make sure. I'm sure there's no kosher organization that they haven't had mistakes.
Archival
I'm sure it doesn't exist.
Huh? That's a pretty obvious mistake.
Archival Thousand Steinsel.
Better, it's
I've made mistakes in my house in Kashrut. I've made mistakes. So you're not going to eat in my house?
That's obviously my opinion.
So that's the difference.
I
think they're great. I think their art school is amazing.
And it's English, which is also bad.
Because I remember I looked at it.
I asked for Wilkinson once.
Right, see, that's another
thing. And he told me in Furish, you go Elau, he says, I have a friend that told me, and he knows, and he's involved in conscious.
If
you
I translate
out,
the Aramaic into Hebrew, then if I translate it into English.
Yeah,
my sister language. Languages.
Can you take their role?
It's more effort, and they're sister languages.
Take their role, yes.
So, like,
you gave the role, you know, and the package is like the yogurt and things like that. It's not an issue.
Like Lihina said, you know,
I mean,
I'm
going to
retain
it
more
than
if I translate it into getting the
children's
costumes.
But, you know,
so... Or I could use a Hebrew art scroll. Or
if you have to separate, let's say you find a carob in a tree somewhere, is that, do you have to separate Trimus and Maestros?
The trees going around the yeshiva grounds are all hefker.
Oh, it was
because the hefker is not chayv.
Where
was
he from?
She taught me a part.
And if you're
eating,
you pull a tree, pull a fruit
off the tree,
it's not hefker, then it's
ganeva. And that was really
double whammy, ganeva and tevel.
Once I had enough time in that, I felt comfortable. I was like, okay, now I can go to Shaitel's. Now I'm just whatever, but...
Where they're going
from. But for her, right? But for her, it was like, you don't understand a word, look it up, and then go back to the
whatever city you're in.
She was very, very strict about
potatoes.
You know, if it's a city like Yerushalayim, I don't think
it's
a
problem. Should I stop it? They're going to listen to us debating whether to stop.
Because they wanted you to really learn the skills. It was good. It was good for me.
Adam White, though.
You mentioned, okay, so the Tehran is not party enough, it's not a Sanhedrin, you should avoid eating it wherever it is. What if, like, your family's visiting and your father's dinner for dinner in a place that is...
You tell your father, Dad, listen, you went to a shiur in yeshiva. And, you know, yeshiva Harzion is not a crazy, whacked out yeshiva. And this is what I was told. And you try to re-educate.
And
your father won't be the first father whose son stood this
talk to like the song.
Change the standards of kashrut, yeah. And no. But I would guess that 90% of Orthodox Jews from America, you know, they just come and they eat any, you know, see a teudah. Why not? You know, because that's what they just habit. You don't think about it.
I was just listening.
If you said that most of the Israelis don't eat mahadrin.
Maybe I spoke Lashon Hara and maybe I shouldn't have said that. I just, what I meant to say is that a lot of times you might discuss it with some Israeli and say, I ain't any weapon.
Right.
You know,
but if that's the rule,
I know from
then.
My children's friends, I know from the discussions in yeshiva guys, okay. Most
so
of them are not so.
How could we eat at their houses? I mean, I understand there are Shomer Shabbos,
because in their house, they're buying, let's say, from the supermarket, fruits and vegetables. And all the supermarket, all the major chains of supermarkets are Mafra, Shuman, and Masra. And that's the biggest issue. Everything else, you don't have. There's nothing really to worry about. You know, they keep kosher. It's the restaurants that have bishul akum issues and farshas challah issues and et cetera, et cetera.
And what do you say? I can't think of a practical case. But would you say that you have to be choshesh the kalim of non-mahadran stuff?
Some people might be. I don't think you have to. In other words, lefi halacha. If you took a kli out of one of these restaurants or whatever, you don't know that there's treif in that kli. There's no ikvus, there's no kvius of isser in the kli.
Okay.
Therefore, I think lufi halacha, you don't have to be makar on the kerem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Friedman. I was told by a
what's
friend,
name?
Alicia Pro.
Yes.
I was told by a friend who's actually an Israeli that that there's actually absolutely no problem with Chol Yisrael in Israel. Anything that has hashgacha that's milchik is definitely Chol Yisrael.
Not true.
Okay.
Not true. There are two different levels of Chol Yisrael. There's some people that keep Chol Yisrael on any on all object on all products.
And some only on milk.
And some only on liquid. Okay. In Israel, you will find, although they are, I heard that they're phasing it out. You will find in some dairy products things that are not necessarily Chol Yisrael. As an example, yogurt that has on it. B-I-O. They have a culture of that's I think imported from Chutz Arts. It's not Chol Yisrael. Certain chocolates are not necessarily Chol Yisrael. But I heard that they're mostly facing these things out.
Okay. Mm. I imagine the milk of the yeshiva, it's Chol Yisrael, yeah?
Yes, sure.
Okay, now just the more mundane medical question. Okay, so you mentioned the possibility of shilshul, right? So I'm having the opposite of shilshul. Like, is that just because of the opposite of diet change, or
it's
like
a diet change? You have to make sure to drink more. You're not drinking enough.
I'm drinking at least 2 liters a day.
Okay.
I have like
fruits and vegetables.
6 or 7 cucumbers.
Fruits
a day.
And vegetables. You do have 6 or 7 vegetables.
Six or 7 cucumbers.
I would say that until you rectify the situation, stay away from rice and pasta.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay.
Are there any restaurants in the Gush area that have a Tav Chevrati? Like, has that gotten out here yet?
Who?
Or the Tav Chevrati?
Tav Chevrati, I don't know what that is. No.
Ah, so in Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, they've started having it.
Oh, is that one of the social justice?
Exactly.
Really? Still going.
I was curious if they started doing it.
We'll have like 5 hours of static.
I guess I should take it, but I don't know how I'm going to find it.
I heard that Rabbi Lichtenstein listens to this recording. I think Rav Cohen mentioned that. Maybe as a joke.
You're Russian on Tav Chevrati? Seriously?
I mean, not to the.
Whose could this be?
I'm going to stop it. Do them a favor.
But I try.
Could I make you your shliach? Hold it up during your supper and ask the chutznikim. It's one of the chutznikim.
It's not conservative. It's
Orthodox
Jews.
Because I don't think we should leave it here.
Really?
Yeah, no, I guess it's a story about the breakdown here. It's not then.
Everyone comes to my soup. Number one, because it's mandatory. Number two, because it's entertaining. Number three, because I focus on